Sean, you guys just recorded an album entitled Science of Annihilation, and what's the significance of the title of that album?
You know, when you do an album, you always got to come up with a killer title, and, you know, we just come off Hell Destroyer, which I thought was a stroke of genius. I'm like, no one has thought of Hell Destroyer yet, so... Mm-hmm. You know, we had to come up with some, a few different ideas, and there was a little obstruction, a little resistance to it because it sounded like a frickin' textbook or something, but the title is just, it's really been well received by the metal community, people that are really into this, you know, subgenre, power metal. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like this is supposed to be a blueprint for just kick-ass power metal, and the title fit pretty well.
Sean, listening to these songs and looking at the themes behind the songs, I guess they would kind of sort of intertwine with the title then?
We just came off a giant concept record, so we kind of wanted to go back to where Darker Than Black was, you know, which is like a no frills, just straight ahead, you know, headbanger. And so everything was real straightforward, not a lot of segue pieces. And the final song, which is kind of like the Science of Annihilation trilogy, was a cool, really helped, you know, encapsulate the whole kind of cosmic vibe of that's running through the album, where this is, you know, that track particularly is a three-part epic where it's a story of a guy who, you know, dies on the battlefield in ancient Rome and becomes like a demigod, and, you know, at the end of the song, basically it's the end of existence. So this album we exterminated the entire universe, whereas the Hell Destroyer, we destroyed the Earth. So where we go from here, I don't know. I got to figure something out that's even on a grander scale. So it's going to be tough.
Sean, you just talked earlier a little bit about the concept that you did a concept album with Hell Destroyer. And Sean, what did you write this album about? What was the concept about for your previous album, Hell Destroyer? You know, so many of the listeners, maybe if they haven't heard that record, they can kind of get a perspective on what that was about.
Well, that was like, you know, I always knew I wanted to do a concept, and I was, you know, really big into, you know, religious conspiracy and stuff. So we took a lot of those themes and put it into basically, you know, a retelling of Revelations, and kind of put it as if like it was a major motion picture of, you know, how would it shake down, you know, how would the rise of the Antichrist be. And, you know, we had a lot of illustrations, which basically had, you know, an army of freaking demons, like, pouring up through a hole in the earth and just, like, ravaging modern society and stuff. And so, that was, you know, the concept itself was just going from the crucifixion of Christ all the way through, you know, the devastation of the planet to the death of Satan, and then 100 years into the future where they resurrect the metal devil. So it covered a lot of ground. That's why it was like almost 80 minutes long.
Now, I noticed you guys are playing Prog Power down in Atlanta this year, and you're playing a few festivals here and there. But what are your plans to play live? Do you have any plans to do maybe like a tour, a small tour? You know, what's the band's plans as far as live shows are concerned?
Well, our deal is, you know, we're not one of these bands like Jump in the Winnebago and, you know, Macaroni and Cheese. And that's probably why we're still, you know, underground, underground band. We haven't really embarked on full-length tours. We did just do our first 3-week tour, you know, of our whole career in Europe like 2 months ago. That went over really, really good, where we headlined it, you know. So we got a taste for, you know, what it can be like, because now it's economically feasible for us, because now, you know, we've got enough fans over these 5 albums we put out where the promoters can pay us enough, and it, you know, the economics are finally there, and our reputation has allowed us to, you know, to command a decent fee and have people, enough people show up where the promoter can, you know, make a profit and everybody's happy. So now that we've kind of done it, you know, the opposite of most bands, like they put out an album, they go tour their ass off, you know, in order to get their popularity. We kind of like let our popularity slowly gestate, and now we're finally touring. I'm starting on the 5th album, but we're doing a little East Coast run, so we're doing a couple shows in New York, which we're excited about. We've never played there before. Doing a show in Tampa, the Prog Power. And then, you know, there's talk of a little Midwest run, so we might make it to Cleveland. We were just on a Cleveland station, what was I call it, Friday night? I think I did an interview on the FM station there. And we got a lot of fans in the Midwest. We did a little run last year in the Midwest, so we got a lot of requests to come back. So we might, you know, we do like little 5 or 6 day runs that are regional, and there's going to be a lot more Europe, and then we're doing a lot of Mexico too because we have a pretty big fan base in Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
Our new DVD that's going to be coming out is from a giant Mexico show, so we love playing in Mexico.
Sean, I want to go back to some history of the band. And you guys recorded your first album, Unveiled, during a time in the mid-90s, during a time when metal was, and I'll quote, uncool. And you had the height of the grunge scene. You know, everyone said metal was dead, and, it, you know, it wasn't really something that people were really interested in, or the media was just completely bashing that genre of music. And, you know, what was it like for you guys to record an album playing the style of heavy metal and the style of music that you play during a time when that style of music was almost like a taboo, or it was really very underground, and not a lot of people really were into it, and the media was really against it? What was it like for you to record an album during that time period?
Well, that's really why the band, you know, formulated, because there was just like all these bands in San Diego broke up, and there was the remnants of a band called Nomad and a band called Crusher that got together and, you know, said, you know, we don't like grunge. We want to play screaming, brutal heavy metal. We really don't care if it's popular or not, because we're writing these songs just to satisfy our own craving for the sound. And the band came together. The cool thing about it was there was a definite power vacuum for that kind of music. So we got to open these shows, you know, early on in our career when we really weren't that good.
Mm-hmm.
Even opening for a band like Great White, where they would still draw like 1,000 people, you know, in San Diego. So that was a pretty fat show.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, we started opening for Judas Priest. We did some Iron Maiden, Dio, Dokken. I mean, every 80s band you can think of. We became one of the most hated bands in Southern California because we opened literally for every show that came through town. It was like Cage is the opener. So all the other bands just hated us because we got all these shows. But, you know, that was a tribute, you know, like I give advice to other bands. Like, what advice would you give to other bands, people, you know, starting out, like, to stick to your guns, because, you know, don't chase the trends. Just do, you know, what's in your heart and play, you know, what you really feel. And that's what we did, and that's kind of a key to our success. I mean, again, we write these songs as, you know, as from the metal fan perspective. Like, you know, I always just say, like, I'm in an arena, and, you know, this stage is set up like, you know, Iron Maiden meets Judas Priest with flames and fire and dragons and freaking steel and stuff. And, you know, what kind of song do I want to hear? How, you know, where do I chant along? Where do I sing? Where does this song grab me? And that's, I think, been one of the keys to our success for, you know, songwriting is just, you know, this is the kind of sound that we love, and it's not contrived, and people can tell that when they hear it.
Mm-hmm. Sean, you had a recent personnel change at the drumming position, I guess you could call it, and you found Norm Leggio. And where did you find him? How did you get him into the band? And what's it like playing with him?
Well, Norm, you know, has always been a friend. You know, he's been in the San Diego music scene he's pretty much an icon in San Diego metal, because he was in Psychotic Waltz, which was, you know, had a huge amount of success overseas. I mean, they were, you know, on the verge of really breaking big. And then he hosted an FM metal show on the big FM station down here for 8 years. So he was like, if you want to get your stuff on the radio, you know, you had to call Norm and say, dude, we got a new song, you know, album playing. So he always spun Cage on his show. It was a, you know, super highly rated show in Southern California. And then he also owned a huge, one of the best metal record stores I've ever seen, called Blue Meanie Records, which was pretty famous. And so he did, like, dealt in all kinds of, you know, rare vinyl and had all the latest stuff. So we'd always go into a store and buy stuff and hang out and talk. And then he was in a couple other bands, you know, between that time where we'd play with him. So he was, you know, when we knew we were going in another direction with the drummer, he was the first call that I made. But I kind of had my, you know, back in my mind, nah, maybe we'll get some little, you know, 19-year-old kid who's a shredder. But the comfort level, you know, with the guy that you already know is just super cool. Because, I mean, when we go on tour with this guy, it's just a laugh a minute, and it's super fun, super fun times. But not only that, but this, he's a total, like, student of the craft. I mean, this guy, like, practices every day. You know, even though he's super technically talented, he still, you know, buys drum books, works on new techniques. You know, he's a walking encyclopedia metal. He knows, like, every guy who played on everything, you know, every album. So you combine all that into, you know, a super dedicated, you know, guy's dedicated his life to metal, and it was a major, major plus. The way that he plays, it allowed us to, with this new album, to put, like, some thrash beats and blast beats in the stuff and really bring the sound to a more furious, you know, frantic direction. And the consensus has been, you know, that this is our best album yet. So he definitely was a big key to that.
Now, you guys have traditionally had a very good following and very good reviews in Europe. And the U.S., you haven't had bad reviews, but you haven't had as big of a response here as in Europe. And, you know, has the response gotten better here in the States for you?
Well, I mean, we've always had, you know, part of that, you know, playing all those shows early in our career, you know, in front of large, large crowds, really allowed us to become, you know, an entertaining live act. I mean, you got to have the songs, you got to have the look, but, you know, to be a performer and an entertainer is a whole other aspect to the thing. I mean, you go and you see a lot of bands, and, like, usually the band's always missing one element, like, okay, the songs aren't good, or, you know, they sound great, but on stage they're kind of boring. So we've been, over the years, you know, being forced to, you know, you have to deliver, you have to entertain, you have to captivate and mesmerize, and that's something that we've become real good at. And in the United States, I mean, we've had some amazing shows here, especially, you know, Southern California. We play a lot of all-ages shows, and these kids, when they see a band like us, they freak out. You know, we play a lot of shows with death metal and screamo bands, and then, you know, we step on stage, and it's like a whole new situation for the kids, and we make the other bands look seriously one-dimensional. So, mm-hmm. The response has been, you know, has been great, and it's really encouraging to see, you know, the youth really embrace this stuff.
Mm-hmm. You know, when you play with bands like screamo bands and stuff like that, and, you know, you got these kids here that have never heard a band like you guys, do you ever see, like, when you guys go on stage and play after some of these groups, and these kids hear you guys, do you ever get the, like, jaw drop, like, in awe, like, look on their faces, like, they don't know what to think, and they're like, oh my god, what kind of band, what am I experiencing here? Do you ever get that look, like, they're just so entranced?
Oh, yeah, I mean, you know, we just played a show up in San Bernardino, and these kids, like, dude, I just flew in from New Orleans, you know, and the kid was, like, 19 years old, and just freaking, you know, was ready to fall on the sword for Cage, and that kind of was just so cool, man, because, you know, it's like when I was 16, you know, this is the same kind of imagery and sound that appealed to me that made me want to freak out and write, you know, Iron Maiden and Judas Priest on my frickin' notebook at, you know, in school, and go to the concert, buy their shirt, fight my way up to the front of the stage no matter what, you know, and you see that same level of excitement in these kids, and it's really inspiring, man. The state of metal to me in the United States is a very healthy spot, because I think the underground roots now are so firmly trenched that, you know, metal will never get kicked completely to the curb like it was before.
Mm-hmm. You guys had a little 4-year lull between Darker Than Black and Hell Destroyer. And why was that? Why did it take so long to release the next album?
Part of it was, like, the album took, like, a year to record because it was so long. I mean, it was, like I said, it's, like, really, it was, like, two albums. And it took, like, 3 years between, you know, playing shows and screwing around and being busy. I'm in the real estate business, and that was, like, a big real estate boom time, too. So I was a freaking, you know, trying to make hay while the sunshine is this day. So mm-hmm. I was just, like, you know, going, hey, man, we'll record the song later, but I got to cash in while the time is right.
Yeah.
So that played a part in, you know, again, writing all that material and making it good. I mean, the song Christ Hammer, we rewrote like frickin' 15 times until it was, at the very end, I came in and got, no, new riff for the verse, and, like, completely overhauled it. So that kind of stuff going along really made it take a long, long time. And we knew after Hell Destroyer, we said, hey, we got to come right out with another one. And we're already, you know, almost halfway through writing the follow-up to Science of Annihilation right now. So a lot of momentum, a lot of, we have a lot of management support now. And there, you know, we've, in our personal lives, we've been able to, you know, sacrifice band success for being successful in our personal lives. And that's allowed us to now, you know, really devote a lot of time and resources towards Cage. And we're just, you know, we're at the peak, I think we're at peak performance right now, and the most activity and press we've ever gotten. And it's just a great time for Cage, and we're just going to keep cranking out, you know, the product, and just make sure we keep the quality level, like, you know, at the super, super high level that we've, you know, been, people know us for.